Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
To all the papas and the mamas who play both roles, happy Father's Day to all of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Sunday is the day of rest for a lot of folks out there, especially Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and even Step Papa Bear. You're mostly appreciated as well.
And maybe even second Papa Bear or whatever is going on right now. I don't know. Families are kind of too widespread, and there's no such thing as a traditional family that you would think in the every sense of the word. All families are now different.
Yeah. Well, a lot of families are now different now. You got so many kids running around nowadays that you just lose track. You have a lot of second cousins.
You lose track of your kids? What? No!
Yeah, second cousins and third cousins and, yeah, all that mess. But either way.
All right, wait to just ignore that and just be like, hey, let's pretend it never happened.
Yeah, we'll pretend.
You ignore your kids. Yeah, you lose track of them.
You lose track of them. Well, not lose track of them like you don't know where they are.
You just said lose track of your kids.
No, I mean, you lose track of time and everything. I forget it. Yeah, way to ruin Father's Day, Baltimore Sports Free for All.
Yeah, you're in the hole now. Stay in it.
Yeah, like unlike Dustin Johnson's ball that didn't make it at the U.S. Open. Ouch.
Or Tiger Woods' club that went further than the ball.
Oh yeah.
I mean, his club decided to think that he had to go now. His planet needed him.
Yeah, you notice that at the U.S. Open in the first and second day, as Tiger was just missing some terrible shots, he just laughed it off. I didn't know if that laughing off seemed natural. It just seemed like he was crying inside, like, no, God, what has happened
I'm
to me?
Next to last at the U.S. Open. What has happened to me?
I was the PGA Player of the Year 2 years ago. What the hell happened?
I was the most dominant player in the league 5 years ago. What happened?
Yeah.
Your ex-wife happened.
Yeah. Well, not that it's her fault, I guess. He brought it upon himself.
He has not been the same since that happened, though.
Yeah.
That and right now he's kind of going through a little bit of trouble in paradise with Lindsey Vonn, so maybe that could also be an explanation for his very recent struggles, including his 85 a few weeks ago that he shot in the 80 that he shot at the U.S. Open.
You notice that when the news broke out that Tiger Woods and Lindsey Vonn split, so many single men in the United States rejoiced when they heard that news.
How would they rejoice? They've got no chance.
No, I know. Lindsey Vonn is definitely a 10-plus, but
10-plus with a lot of money. She's only going with 10-plus guys with a lot of money, so
yeah.
You have no absolute
unless you hit Powerball, you are out of the range.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Lindsey Vonn is, even if you become like the guy at the ski shop that goes, "Hey man, you want to get some skis? I got some skis for you. I got some Nautilus skis for you. I got a blasted Dookie, man."
And all of a sudden you're from Texas.
Yeah, and then you have no. But you still have no
chance.
You're
a Texas ski resort expert. Wow.
Even if you were at a ski resort and were selling skis to Lindsey Vonn, you still have no chance. And you have a better chance than just about 98% of the guys out there.
Yep. So, yeah, surprisingly, we are going to be talking to something in relation to Tiger Woods. We will be talking about the 2015 U.S. Open and the champion of that U.S. Open, Jordan Spieth. But, of course, we'll start off with Baltimore Orioles talk. Baltimore Orioles had a nice week there. It followed my prediction of 5-2 to keep things above water, keep their heads above water, so that was always nice.
They were well above water. They were pretty much in the 3-foot section.
Didn't look good Sunday. Well, it looked good at the very beginning Sunday.
But then it didn't. Well, Chris Tillman didn't look good Sunday.
Yeah. Offense looked good as a whole, but yeah, Chris Tillman.
Yeah, Chris Tillman has Okay, so maybe this. Maybe Chris Tillman has become a martyr for the Baltimore Orioles because the Orioles themselves were not a very pleasant team to watch for a little while there, and they were, you know, being quoted as a dumpster fire, so to speak. Well, maybe Chris Tillman decided, you know what, guys? I'm going to absorb all of the hatred. I'm going to be your shield for the hatred. I'm going to become the dumpster fire while you all become good.
Yeah, and Chris Tillman, a former All-Star from the 2013 MLB season, will definitely not be in this year's All-Star game. But
hey, through to voter flubs, he could be.
Yeah, you know, voter flubs. Well, yeah, if Baltimore, if you vote him in enough, you may just. Well, actually, you can't vote a pitcher in. That's a managerial decision. You can vote position players in. And yes, we will be talking about the flub that happened this past week where seven.
Actually, it was eight, but now it's been reduced to seven now.
As of this podcast, but seven Kansas City Royals position players were leading their respective positions.
They were all going to be starting in the All-Star game. It would have been a club of Royals, and you got to know that something was up right there.
Yeah, so June 22nd, the date of this podcast, we're going to read you the numbers of those players, and be sure to have a vomit bag ready because I'm sure you'll need it. But me and Ray, we're going to be looking at other players from around the American League and who we think deserves to start in the 2015 MLB All-Star Game in Cincinnati.
It's not going to be all Orioles, okay? So don't worry about that. We're not going to have eight Orioles on our starting rotation, our starting lineup.
I have two.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, how about that? But this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can find us on what, Ray?
SFMSports.net and Audioboom.
And Stitcher and Spreaker as well.
Along with our social media sites.
Yep. On Facebook, you can find us at the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All podcast. If you want to retweet us or follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at @BSportsFree4All. And you can check out our blogs at the sportsblog.com, where later this week I'll be posting something about the Orioles. And if this is a positive turning point for this team, or if it's just a mirage.
And if this is a positive turning point, as in, do I finally finish the GoPro video from Wipeout and get that up on the blog?
We are waiting for you to wipe out. We are waiting for that to happen.
Oh, I'm just building the suspense at this point. I'm making you want it more. Yeah. Oh, wow, what a showman.
Yeah, what a showman indeed. Well, as of this podcast, the Baltimore Orioles stand at 36-33, having a well-deserved day off on this Monday. Third in the American League East, three games behind the American League East leading Tampa Bay Rays, who are having quite resilient pitching, but seem to lack the bats, but nonetheless, the pitching has held up. Of course, you got the Yankees in second, and fourth, you got the Toronto Blue Jays, unless Toronto fans are saying, oh, we're still tied for third. Well, you lost this weekend.
Yeah, you almost thought you were going to call them the Toronto Blades, but I was like, that would have been pretty cool sounding for a baseball team.
You know what? The game on Sunday could have passed for a low-scoring CFL game circa 1994. And who was it? The Toronto Argonauts and the Baltimore Stallions. Yeah. So the Baltimore Stallions held off the Argonauts in a very low-scoring game, 13-9 on Sunday. Like, wait, no, it's baseball.
No, that's a high-scoring game. What are you talking about? Especially, you know, this was the second high-scoring game in less than a week because we all remember what happened on Tuesday, where the Orioles won 19-3.
Yeah, going down the box scores real quick. Of course, they had the home at home series with the Philadelphia Phillies, two at Oriole Park at Camden Yards and two at Citizens Bank Park.
Came out quite well in that series, winning 3 out of 4.
Yep, Orioles won the Monday game 4-0. Chen was your winner in that game, improved his record to 3-4. On the Tuesday game, the Orioles won 19-3. Tillman,
franchise record for home runs.
Yep, franchise record for home runs. We definitely had a field day with that on our Facebook page there.
They were eating Philly cheesesteaks.
Yep, Orioles were eating good cheesesteaks. Phillies didn't have any good cheesesteaks.
Phillies were eating like in Dundalk and with too much salt on it.
It was so bad that the bus driver went to Oriole Park at Camden Yards and saw the Phillies players. He's like, nah, you guys are walking home. No. Yep, Tillman was your winner in that game, improved to 5-7. On the Wednesday game, the Orioles won at Philadelphia 6-4. Ubaldo Jimenez improved his record to 5-3. On Thursday, they lost a close one 2-1, but hey, 3 out of 4 ain't bad. Bud Norris, your boy Bud Norris, lost his fifth game. Even though it wasn't entirely his fault, the offense was just off in that
game.
Yeah,
by the way, Bud Norris was beginning the season. You would have think that he was going to be a 20-game loser, but it turns out that he's kind of turned it around now and has only lost 5 games.
He has been quite decent in his last several starts, so it's definitely a nice trend there. On Friday, where every fan says, oh no, the Orioles lost 2 in a row, here we go again, they can't beat Toronto. Orioles were trailing Toronto on the Friday, June 19th game, but did come back in the top of the ninth inning, but it just wasn't enough as they lost 5-4. Mike Wright was the loser in that game, had his record go down to 2-3. On Saturday, the Orioles did come up with some late inning runs, winning 5-3 on Saturday, June 20th. Darren O'Day was your winner, improved to 3-0. Zach Britton collected his 19th save of the season. And on the high-scoring day on Sunday, June 21st...
Well, Chris Tillman is the story of this game right now.
Yeah,
he's the only one people are talking about. They're not talking about the fact that the Orioles were able to salvage his performance.
We will definitely praise the offense coming up. But yes, the Orioles won the Sunday game 13-9. Darren O'Day, in his second consecutive appearance in that series, improved to 4-0, just able to close it out there and get the Orioles a nice series victory in the great north, that is Canada, or the Toronto Blue Jays. So now let's look at their statistics from this past week, Ray. Really great week for the offense in general. If you look at their total team batting average or total team on base percentage, it actually was quite phenomenal. And you know me, I am adamant on great on base percentage. The team on base percentage for this week, Ray, 343.
Yeah.
That will definitely get it done.
You really like that on base percentage, don't you?
What's wrong with the on base percentage?
I mean, it's a great stat and everything like that.
You have to get on base to score runs, right? I mean,
yeah, you got to win to score a touchdown.
You know, if you have guys on base and you put the ball in play, your chances of scoring runs are really good.
You got one guy going boom, another guy going whap, and this guy's going nowhere.
Well, yeah, looking at the Orioles' statistics here as far as offense is concerned, the top player from this week, no question about it, was Manny Machado, 13 for 29, hitting .448, on base, .515, going with the on base again. Two doubles, three home runs, eight runs driven in, nine runs scored. Manny Machado wasn't really your AL player of the week like he was the week before, but I like the trend he's on right now.
Yeah, redemption, because here it was at the beginning of the season, the first couple of months. We're talking about Manny Machado being a bust, a goat, being like, what the hell happened to Manny Machado here at third base? The guy's making errors left and right. The batting is just not there, and it's just like, Manny Machado, what are we going to do with you? Are you just like the spiraling into this void of becoming, you know, A-Rod's head but not A-Rod's bat?
Yeah, and just seeing how he has been putting extra base power in, and it's amazing. Oh, by the way, three stolen bases for Manny Machado too. So, yeah. You could say that Manny Machado is not only seeing the ball well, but he's also reading pitchers well to the point where he just feels comfortable going after the bag.
He's got pitchers eating out of his hand right now. He is hitting a beach ball with a tennis racket right now. That's how good he's hitting.
Him and both of his robotic knees. Can we call him robotic knees now?
I mean, you could probably call him bionic knee.
Bionic knees, yeah.
Actually, bionic knees sounds more badass, but isn't that like a wrestling move, a bionic knee, or is that bionic elbow?
The bionic elbow is the
Do they have a bionic knee?
I guess if you fly really high and just happen to nail somebody with the knee, that does seem bionic.
I would think so, just... But you can't, like, do the twirly thing with the elbow and then hit him with it?
Okay, now, if I were to name you three players who were, one of them was the second best hitter of this past week, I would give you three names. Matt Wieters, Chris Davis, Travis Snyder. Which name would stand out at the very least of having a great offensive week?
Matt Wieters.
Oh, come on. No, stop.
Travis Snyder.
Yep. Travis Snyder was your second leading hitter this week. Surprisingly, 9 for 22 with a .409 batting clip. Scored six runs, four doubles, one triple, even though that triple was more of a fielding snub from the Toronto Blue Jays outfielder.
Aren't most triples fielding snubs?
They pretty much are, aren't they? I mean,
that would be the only chance you have of getting a triple as a fielding snub, or when you have to like hit it in that right field corner in Camden Yards and just gets trapped back there and the outfielder can't find it. Yeah. Do you get a triple off of a fielding snub?
Now, what was the old stadium out in New York many, many decades ago? Polo Grounds. You remember the center field wall was about, what, 480, 490? If you hit it past the center fielder, you were guaranteed a triple. Even if you were the slowest human being on earth, you were definitely going to get a triple there. But, yeah. Travis Snyder was hustling and bustling with the four doubles, one triple, one home run, four RBIs. And, of course, everybody's saying, oh, Travis Snyder's never going to replace Nick Markakis. Well, you know what? Maybe he doesn't have to replace Nick Markakis. But if he continues this trend and continues to up his batting average, think about it this way. Travis Snyder raises batting average from the 250s to the 270s. And if he keeps continuing to get better and better, maybe people will, for one summer, forget about Nick Markakis.
Yeah,
or am I wishing too much here?
I don't know. They weren't really trying to replace Nick Markakis. The person they were trying to replace was Nelson Cruz. And for the last 2 weeks, that's been working.
Yeah, for
3 weeks, actually, because last week, Manny Machado was the AL Offensive Player of the Week. But the week before that, Matt Wieters was tearing the cover off the ball. And now this week, Machado does it again. So for 3 weeks now, it seems like that strategy of replacing Nelson Cruz with three other players is working.
Yeah, also going down the list here offensively, J.J. Hardy was hitting .357, had four RBIs and a double, was very pivotal in the Toronto Blue Jays series. Jimmy Paredes, once again, for another week in a row, Mr. Bright Spot on your box score there, hitting .333 with two home runs, five RBIs, scoring four runs. Welcome back, DH Jimmy Paredes, and upping the batting average once again.
Of course, not being lost in all of this performance is one newcomer, Chris Parmalee.
Chris Parmalee, yep, 6-for-19 this week, had three home runs and four
RBIs.
And
his first two games.
Yeah, three home runs were against the Philadelphia Phillies. So if Chris Parmalee played a half a season against the Philadelphia Phillies, he'd be the all-time single-season home run king. But nah, he doesn't have to face the Phillies all the time. But he did have a solid week, though. 6-for-19, five runs scored, three home runs, four runs driven in, hitting .316. Matt Wieters also drove in a home run, hit .267. Ryan Flaherty had a home run. Chris Davis had two home runs, but batted .200.
He's right at the Mendoza line.
Right at the Mendoza line, but still was driving in the home runs, though, Ray. You do have to give him that.
Yeah, because Chris Davis, if he's hitting anywhere above .200, that's a plus side in his book. How many strikeouts did he have this week? I have to look at that again.
Chris Davis, if I'm looking at his strikeouts, let's see. He had 25 at-bats in seven games. He struck out
nine times,
yep. But he did have five walks, which upped the on-base. Here I go with the on-base again.
Well, there were a lot of walks this week, so that's always a good sign.
A lot of patience with the Orioles.
That's a good sign with the Orioles, is that if you have that kind of a patience at the plate, good things happen to you.
Yeah, so it was always nice to see. By the way, Ray Navarro is still on the last 7 days stats list. The guy hasn't been on here in a while. So, Orioles.com, ESPN.com, CBSSports.com, please update your past 7 days statistics, because they are just not, they're not working right now. Jeez Louise. But going to pitching, and you could say it was good week for pitching, unless your
name is Chris Tillman.
Or Mike Wright.
Or even Wei Yin Chen, who got sent down.
Yeah, let's talk about that first. Okay, Wei Yin Chen had a solid victory this past week against the Philadelphia Phillies, pitching eight scoreless innings, nine strikeouts, one walk, getting the victory in his only start this week. You would think that that is not a sign of a guy getting sent down to the minors. And, of course, his agent Scott Boras, of course, had to make noise. He had to make vocal noise, like, Buck Showalter, Dan Duquette, Peter Angelos, what are you guys doing to my client? You know, well, I don't know if Scott Boras sounds like that. I never heard Scott Boras speak in my life.
I mean, hey, a defense lawyer has to defend Aaron Hernandez, so he's got to be able to defend that. Of course they're going to say that.
That is a bad analogy.
Of course, you know, the producers of Game of Thrones are going to say that one character is dead. Of course the guy who plays that one character is saying he is dead, not coming back next season. They just did that on the season. So of course they're not going to say he's going to inexplicably get it revived next year. But of course it's going to happen. But that's what they're going to say, because that's what they have to say.
Now, do you think this is a big deal, little deal, or no deal with the Orioles and Wei Yin Chen and their little fight that they have going on?
I'm thinking that this is a sign that he's not going to be back next year.
You really think so?
I would think so. I mean, they're looking at it, sending him down to the minors, trying to like devalue him just a little bit and say, hey, you know what? You're not worth the amount of money that your agent is asking for you.
Do you think that this was more, I think it was more of a strategic move by Buck Showalter, because you know that as a manager, he loves players with options, because if a player is too cold or too hot, they can always send him down. Like, look at Mike Wright, for example. Mike Wright was hot in his first two starts, and we definitely will get to him in a little bit. You know what? Let's get to him right now. Mike Wright in the one start against the Toronto Blue Jays didn't even make it past the second inning. 1 1/3 innings pitched, four walks, one strikeout, gave up four earned runs off three hits with a 27 ERA.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen so quickly.
And it's a shame. I hate to see rookies get disheveled like that and after two solid starts.
Talk about having the carpet pulled from underneath of you.
Like, welcome to the real world, kid.
Yeah. You had all the success. Now let's all take it away from you and see how you handle adversity. And right now, he's not handling adversity too well.
No, definitely not. And looking at how he's pitched in his last several starts, he just hasn't been able to put anything of quality together, not even making it past six innings. And it just makes me think that did his head just get a little too big after his first two starts, that maybe he thinks, oh, you know what, I got this whole major league career figured out, and then boom, you're facing AL East rivals and they're just getting the best of you, like the Toronto Blue Jays did on Friday. And just, you know, like you said, had the carpet pulled out from under you. Hey, you know, we're sending you back to the minors. You need to get your stuff together. But I don't think that was the case with Wei Yanchen, though, because I just think it was a strategic move. And I'm sure, and you know the old adage, Ray, winning cures all ills. If yep. Wei Yanchen goes on a 10-start winning streak and becomes an all-star caliber pitcher, I'm sure this sort of thing, by the time contract negotiations, it'll be like a minor little deal. A minor little deal.
Very, pun intended.
Yeah, but no pun intended. But one guy whose contract will be coming up shortly, who may be looking for ace-type money, is one Chris Tillman, who this past week did get a win in the Philly series and pitched 7 1/3 innings pitched, but his last start against the Toronto Blue Jays was something, you know, left little to be desired. Let's just put it that way, to put it nicely. In the start against the Toronto Blue Jays on the 21st, Tillman gave up 6 earned runs off 6 hits, 2 home runs. Those home runs, back-to-back home runs, by the way. 1 strikeout and threw 38 pitches. And it just made me think there for a second about Chris Tillman. Is he who he is? I mean, is he just that guy that is just going to frustrate you every fifth day or every tenth day that he pitches?
I mean, considering that less than a year ago we were talking about, don't waste a Tillman start. Whenever you've got a Tillman start, do not score 2 runs. Do not score 1 run or no runs. You got to be able to give this guy some run support, because right now he is your biggest ace that you've got, and pitching is not your strongest, is not your strong point. But now it's this year. Chris Tillman is not the strong point.
No, definitely not. And you know that when negotiations come and Dan Duquette's sitting in the conference room there, John Angelos, Peter Angelos are sitting in the conference room there, and Chris Tillman and his agent want to talk about getting a Max Scherzer deal, all they need to do is pull a tape from Sunday, June 21st, 2015 on Father's Day and say, hey, Chris, do you remember this game? Your offense gave you a 7-0 lead, and then you gave up 6 earned runs in the next inning. Would Max Scherzer do that to his team? I don't think so.
No, Max Scherzer's going to hit a guy on a perfect game.
Oh, that guy leaned in and you know it.
Oh,
that was so Bush League. That was the most Bush League thing I've ever seen in a major league game.
Well, here's the thing. If you're Max Scherzer, don't locate it inside like that.
Yeah, it is. I guess that is the argument right there. Ubaldo Jimenez did get a win in his recent start against the Philadelphia Phillies. Pitched 6 2/3 innings, gave up 8 hits, 3 earned runs, 1 home run. Well, that one home run scored 2, so I guess if you do want to put a little asterisk near there. But needless to say, he did get a quality start.
8 strikeouts.
8 strikeouts, no walks, 4.05 earned run average. I'm liking this version of Ubaldo Jimenez.
I really like this version of Ubaldo Jimenez, especially since now he's better than Ervin Santana right now.
He's still walking the tightrope at times, but he's not falling over the tightrope.
Yeah, he's that guy on the Grand Canyon walking the tightrope, like, Jesus, you have the ability to stop this wind. Jesus, you have the ability to stop this wind. Oh, please. And, like, I don't know. If we could have a drinking game every time that guy mentioned Jesus, we'd all be like completely plastered right now.
Exactly. Kevin Gausman made a start this past weekend against the Toronto Blue Jays. Got a no decision, but managed to pitch 5 innings, gave up 2 earned runs off 4 hits, 1 strikeout, 1 walk, and had a 3.60 earned run average. Is it safe to say that Chris Tillman is getting back into the thick of things where the clubhouse can say, you know what, the future still looks semi-bright, even though Mike Wright has fallen off the wayside? We don't know what's going to happen with Dylan Bundy. We don't know what Kevin Gausman's going to do bullpen-wise or starting pitching-wise, but this is a good sign that the kid may finally get things figured out sooner or later.
Yeah, with Mike Wright, though, this is a thing that concerns me, is that how he's faced adversity so far this season after, you know, coming off of just a complete dominant 2 starts and then just having to see that happen. Will it shake his confidence going forward? Will he be able to overcome this? That right there is a sign of a good pitcher or a bad pitcher, is if they can overcome the adversity. And we shall see if Mike Wright's going to be a starter from here on out, or is he going to be a bullpen guy, or even on the team at all.
And you know what Kevin Gausman can say that Dylan Bundy can't say, or Mike Wright can't say? Kevin Gausman can say that he pitched in meaningful games, and we're talking about the Detroit series, where he was just stellar out of the bullpen, and he has that experience. He has that mindset to say, okay, I do have the experience to start games, but at the same time, in a meaningful matchup, I can still step up when my team needs me. And Kevin Gausman, making his first appearance in quite some time due to injury, actually put together quite an effort starting-wise. Now, Bud Norris, on the other hand, your boy, I know, had a six-inning performance against the Philadelphia Phillies.
Fans can't see that I'm rolling my eyes
right
now.
Yeah, I know. Had a 3 ERA. Still lost, but like we were saying earlier, he's on the right track starting pitching-wise.
Hey, kids, how you guys get back on the right track?
Yeah, and Bud Norris is certainly doing that. Pitchers that had a solid week, well, Zach Britton had 2 saves and 4 appearances, had 4 innings pitched, did give up 1 earned run in the Saturday game when he was closing, but did manage to pull off some solid efforts there. Chaz Rowe, once again, Ray, in 3 appearances, had 3 scoreless innings, 3 strikeouts, 2 walks. Is it safe to say that he's the best long relief pitcher on this team right now?
I would say so. He's definitely better than TJ McFarland.
How about Darren O'Day? 2 wins picked up this week, 2 2/3 shutout innings, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks. And looking at Darren O'Day's stats this year, Ray, he's 4-0 and his ERA, 0.98.
Yeah, that's a pretty good...
He is filthy status.
Yeah, that's a pretty good setup guy right there. That's pretty much the reason why they decided to get rid of Andrew Miller and not pick him up. I mean, yeah, still would like to have Andrew Miller on this roster. Oh my goodness, if we had Andrew Miller on this roster, that bullpen would be so much more lights out than it already is. But you can't have your cake and eat it too, Josh. So you just got to settle for Darren O'Day and his .98 ERA and Zach Britton coming in and shutting the door.
And before we get to the upcoming schedule for the Baltimore Orioles for this week, we do have to give this guy a smidge of credit, and that is lefty reliever Brian Mattis. In 3 appearances, he had 3 shutout innings, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk. Yeah, after the suspension, it left a little sour taste in most fans' mouths, but it is nice to see Mattis sort of getting back on the right track and being that strong lefty reliever that the Orioles so desperately need down the stretch.
Yeah, but you can't help but notice that Brian Mattis, the game that he comes back is the game that the Orioles lose and end their 6-game winning streak.
Yeah.
He's the jinx. He's the weak link.
You still think that he's the weak link?
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Okay, so for this week, the Orioles have 3 away and 3 more at home. So starting Tuesday, June 23rd, they will start a 3-game series at Fenway Park in Boston against the Red Sox.
I'm smelling a sweep.
You really think so? They're that bad, huh?
Yeah.
They are that bad, folks.
I am
really
smelling
are.
A sweep right now.
Oh, man.
At Camden North.
All right. And then at Oriole Park at Camden Yards this coming weekend on June 26th through the 28th, Friday through Sunday, they will be hosting the Cleveland Indians, who the Orioles actually visited not too long ago and took 2 out of 3 on the road.
Maybe they take 2 out of 3 again, and we have ourselves a 5-1 record.
So you think they have to go 5-1 this week?
I'm thinking 5-1.
I'll settle for 4-2. 5-1, I think, is the absolute best they could do. If they go 3-3, I would start to worry a little bit that they're playing bad baseball once again, because after that, you're going to have 4 games against Texas, then the White Sox, then Twins, and then Nationals. And
yeah, that's the hard part of the schedule.
Just until you get to that All-Star game in the Midsummer Classic in July.
Yeah, don't crash land into the All-Star break.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
All right, Ray Atkinson, you're talking about crash landing. Well, speaking of something that on paper or online looks like a car wreck,
that would be the All-Star balloting as of right now.
The American League portion of the All-Star balloting.
You don't think it goes on in the National League? I mean, we don't have as much obvious evidence as the American League does. I mean, come on. When the story broke about how there was something wrong with the All-Star balloting process and MLB is investigating and seeing what's up with it, you had 8 Kansas City Royals as starters.
Yeah.
In the American League All-Star game. That was that should not happen.
Yeah.
And this is not coming from a salty Baltimore podcast. just because it's the Kansas City Royals who wore shirts that said, "These O's ain't royal."
But that was just Jeremy Guthrie.
That was Jeremy Guthrie, but they had the shirt. Come on, man. They made that.
I know they made that. Yeah, when I read that story, I just thought back to how many summers we had in the past several seasons, where you had multiple Cardinals players leading the NL All-Star ballots.
And multiple Yankees players leading the AL All-Star ballots.
Yeah, and of course, people do get in a huff about it because they think, oh, it's going to be an all-Yankees All-Star game. I'm like, well, not necessarily. Sometimes just because the guy's leading the vote doesn't necessarily mean he's going to start. And plus, isn't there a limit to how many teams can have as many players as possible? Because I know the Orioles, they had four representatives in the 2013 game, and some people said, well, that's sort of the limit right there.
Yeah, I would think so, because every single club has got to be represented in the All-Star game, because after all, it is the fans' game. It is an exhibition.
You have 15 teams per league.
Yeah, so you've got to have 15 unique starters or 15 unique players on that team, and you got to be able to get it right. Of course, everybody remembers Cito Gaston when Mike Mussina was getting ready to warm up for Oriole Park at Camden Yards, and then he decides not to put him in, and you had T-shirts that said Cito sucks. But now you have it to where every single team gets a starter, and everybody wants to make sure that every single player gets their time they need. And unfortunately, that led to the dilemma we faced many years ago, where they ran out of starters and had to call the game a tie.
Yep.
And then they had to go with the All-Star Game Matters. I'm thinking, instead of just doing that, why don't we have it to where if teams run out of players, can't we bring some back?
Yep. This year's All-Star Game will be in Cincinnati, Ohio. So, yes, it will be a National League-led All-Star Game this season. And looking at the players, the Kansas City Royals players who were either leading the ballot or in the top running for the ballot, let's go down position by position. First base, you have Eric Hosmer, who's hitting 298, 8 home runs, 38 runs driven in, and is second on the ballot in AL first baseman.
He was first.
Was first, but then,
like I said, it was 8. Now it's down to 7. And he's the one that got dropped.
Yeah. Thankfully.
I mean, I would say that he's got a legit claim to being an All-Star.
Oh, no question.
But he also plays the same position as Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah, and Miguel Cabrera, year after year, Miguel Cabrera is pretty much going to go down as one of the best hitters of all time.
346 he's hitting right now with 15 home runs and 48 RBIs. The dude is definitely having an historic run for a ball player right now. And for all intents and purposes, it's clean.
Yep, second baseman Omar Infante leading the ballot with a .229 batting
average.
Now,
that's the laughable one.
Zero home runs, 18 RBIs, leading second baseman.
I mean, that's almost like John Jaso getting in the All-Star game, and John Jaso doesn't even have any stats.
Jonathan Scope hasn't played baseball for the Orioles in nearly 2 months, and he has more credentials to be a starting second baseman for the American League team than Omar Infante. Come on.
No, I'm going with somebody different in that regard. I'm going with Cleveland's Jason Kipnis, who right now is also hitting a clip at .345, 5 home runs and 28 RBIs. That guy is hitting pretty well as well. And with a second baseman, if you can hit .345 as a second baseman, you are a valuable commodity to your team. You deserve the recognition to be an All-Star, and you deserve to be a recognition as a starting All-Star and not Omar Infante.
Okay, so first base, you and I agree on Miguel Cabrera. You say Kipnis for second base. Second base, I'm picking Jose Altuve. He's hitting .287, has 5 home runs, 28 RBIs, and is leading this team in stolen bases, one of the top players in stolen bases this year in the American League. So, and plus, the guy was one of the leading hitters last year in the American League and was way overlooked. So, yeah, definitely we'll be picking him to represent second base. Now, shortstop, Alcides Escobar, .271, 2 home runs, 26 RBIs, leading shortstops. Once again, Ray, laughable. Because it's shortstop, and we both, as much as we hate to agree on this, Boston Red Sox shortstop, Xander Bogaerts.
He's the one bright start. Xander Bogaerts is the one bright spot on the Boston Red Sox this year. And yes, you and I both agreed that he should be the starter for the shortstops representing the American League. And,
yeah.
With Kansas City right there, another player bites the dust. So now we've whittled it down to, I want to say, five Kansas City Royals that are remaining on the American League roster as an all-star?
Actually, six. We have five that are leading and one that's in contention for a spot.
No, what I'm saying, though, is that since Miguel Cabrera wiped out Hosmer, I mean, that leaves it at seven. But then we selected a different second baseman. That makes it six. So now we select a different shortstop. That makes it five. So we've got five Kansas City Royals left in five different positions.
Well, we got six more positions, though.
I know. I'm just going with it. Look, it's five. That's how many we got left. Because seven we're leading going in. We've already knocked out two.
Now, third base.
Do your math.
Now, third base is interesting because Mike Moustakas does have credentials to make an argument to make the AL All-Star team, hitting .325, six home runs, 27 runs batted in. Ray, you and I, we talked about this. You don't think he would make the All-Star team as a starter, but who would you have at third base?
Josh Donaldson. Do I have to say it as a Baltimore Oriole podcast? Yes, Josh Donaldson.
What are his numbers this year, Josh Donaldson?
.302 with 17 home runs, 46 RBIs.
Manny Machado representing third base, .303, 14 home runs, 38 RBIs.
Your orange and black glasses are showing there, Josh, with your purple beat headphones.
I just think it would be interesting to see Josh Donaldson and Manny Machado sharing the same bench, playing the same position.
If only those that cord on those Beats headphones was orange instead of red.
You need to stop that right now.
What was saying how you bought purple Beats in terms of the Baltimore Ravens? Hey, even the ear cups are black, so it's purple and black right there for you.
All right. The catcher position, this is another guy you could say could make an argument to start. Salvador Perez hitting .280, 11 home runs, and 30 RBIs for the Kansas City Royals this year. But once again, Ray, you didn't pick a Royal either, and neither did I. Who did you have for catcher for the American League?
I had Russell Martin.
Okay. And how's he doing this year, Farron?
.282, 10 home runs.
Toronto Blue Jays, right?
And 35 RBIs. Yeah, the Orioles just faced him, Russell Martin. I'm just like thinking to myself, it's like Jumanji right now. Russell Martin as a starting catcher is an all-star contender, leading an all-star contender. What year is it?
My player for the catcher position for the American League is Stephen Vogt of the Oakland Athletics. .294, 13 home runs, and 51 runs batted in. I think that's all-star worthy.
Yeah, the point of this is that both of those guys that we just mentioned are over the Kansas City Royals starter right there.
Now, the designated hitter position, Kendrys Morales for the Kansas City Royals, a player who I wish the Orioles would have coughed up a few million to pick up just because his bat wouldn't hurt. But then again, the Orioles really haven't been lacking on offense as of late.
Yeah, like I said, they are right now. That strategy of replacing Nelson Cruz with three different players is working.
Now, Kendrys Morales, .289, 8 home runs, 45 RBIs. But, Ray, let's be honest. Well, let's just cut the argument short. You and I picked the same designated hitter.
Nelson Cruz.
.315, 19 home runs, 44 RBIs. You can't argue against that, Ray.
You cannot argue against Nelson Cruz whatsoever.
Now, the outfield position, on the other hand, though. You have Lorenzo Cain, who is hitting .294 with six home runs, 32 RBIs, and is leading a position there in the outfield, as well as Royals outfielder Alex Gordon, .273, 8 home runs, 31 RBIs. And Alex Rios is fifth. Fifth Alex Rios is with a .226 average, one home run, 9 RBIs, 40 up. I know, it's revolting. Folks, get the vomit bag out. None of these players, once again, and we can say this, no Royal was voted in our starting lineups. Ray, who do you have as your starting outfield for the American League team?
Mike Trout.
Okay, same here.
.304, 18 home runs and 41 RBIs.
Jose Bautista, same here, right?
Jose Bautista. And then we differ on center field.
Yep. Bautista, by the way, .260, 14 homers, 49 runs driven in. Center field, who did you pick?
Jacoby Ellsbury.
And what are his numbers looking like this year?
Ouch. Jacoby Ellsbury, his stats are .324. And he's got one home run, but that .324 is what makes it, you know, worthy.
He's got a couple stolen bases this year, too, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, so he's sort of earning his contract money out there with the New York Yankees. My center fielder, of course, is Adam Jones. .298, 10 home runs, 36 RBIs. And that pick mainly is name recognition. Adam Jones has a couple all-star votes. He has a couple all-star nods under his belt. He pretty much is a face of Major League Baseball right now. I mean, you look on the MLB Network, they just have commercials of Adam Jones and what he does in his spare time and how he likes to laugh his ass off when Buck Showalter's in a bad mood, but I digress. It is you know, it pretty much is a name recognition thing, kind of like Torrey Hunter. Not saying Adam Jones is at the status that Torrey Hunter's at right now, because Torrey Hunter will be seeing his day in the Hall of Fame. But you have Adam Jones, a guy who can hit 25 to 30 home runs a year. His batting average is always going to be good. He's going to be a Gold Glove center fielder year in, year out. And I just do not see any Kansas City player appending Jones in center field, nonetheless Lorenzo Cain for that matter.
I mean, yeah, if Jacoby Ellsbury didn't get hurt or anything like that, yeah, he would be a shoo-in, but because of that, you got the controversy and everything like that. You don't know when Jacoby Ellsbury is going to be back, but if he's back before the All-Star break and continues to put up the numbers that he did before he went down, yeah, he's the starting center fielder.
Yeah, so what was the lesson we learned here on this podcast with the AL All-Star ballots and the voting?
Is that no Royal should be the starter.
And not only that, though, 35 votes, and I'll say this as an example. Just recently, I voted in the MLB All-Star game. I voted five times. I put my ballot in five times. After five times, I got tired of it. I was done. I just couldn't do it anymore. That's what's wrong. They need to cut down the votes.
That and when they pass out the ballots, like during the actual games.
Oh, the punch-in ballots?
I just like punching for fun. I'm just like, doom, 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 done. Okay, whatever. And I just throw it away at the end of the game.
Do you ever do a write-in vote?
I wrote in myself.
I wrote in Eddie Murray 1 year just to see if he would actually make it.
I wrote in Ray Atkinson, see if I could get any traction on that.
Oh, dude. Hey, who is this Ray Atkinson fellow? He got a lot of write-in votes in Baltimore. Like, I hacked every one of them, but nah.
That's probably not out of the realms of possibility.
No, not at all. And that is what is so scary about the All-Star game is that either things will get right and we'll see the right players have the right starts, or our worst nightmare could come true, Ray. We could have an all Kansas City starting team, and nobody wants that.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
So the U.S. Open happened this past weekend, this past Father's Day weekend.
Much to the chagrin of Fox viewers.
Much to the chagrin of just about every single golfer as well, as they're complaining about the greens that were played at the U.S. Open. Much to the chagrin of Tiger Woods, who shot an 80 and was next to last before he got cut.
And laughed it off.
Yes, yeah, so.
And cried later.
But not much to the chagrin of one Jordan Spieth, who's now won his second major of the year. After winning the Masters earlier on and has two more to go, could he be a Grand Slam champion?
Yep. Jordan Spieth, who at the age of 22 was the youngest U.S. Open champion since Bobby Jones did it in 1923, also was the fourth player to win multiple events before turning 22, which followed Tiger Woods, also followed Sergio Garcia and Robert Gamez. And you look at everything that Spieth did this year as far as his dominant performance at the Masters, his dramatic turn of events in the 18th hole at the U.S. Open in Washington, and Dustin Johnson, when he was up and he had to make that 12.4-yard putt, which, folks, I know on TV it looks tiny, but a 12.4-yard putt to the hole is a very long shot nonetheless. However, that shot for Eagle would have put Dustin Johnson ahead 6 under par over Spieth's 5 under par. But Johnson, of course, later on in that matchup in the 18th hole, messed up the shot for Eagle and then messed up the shot for par. And basically, that's all she wrote there for the U.S. Open. And
yeah,
of course,
putting was the... Putting was a story, as the greens, somebody compared it to, Sergio Garcia compared it to playing basketball without a backboard.
Yeah. So Spieth was your winner with a 5 under par, and he defeated golfers such as Louis Oosthuizen, Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, Cameron Smith, Charles Schwartzel, Rory McIlroy, who finished at an even par, Jason Day finished at an even par as well. And it's funny, the last time we talked about golf on this show, which was a subject and not so much a matter of discussion before we got into our topics, we were talking about the revolution that is the youth in golf. And Jordan Spieth was one of those main characters we talked about.
Yeah, and we were talking about it as, hey, the people who grew up watching Tiger Woods are now the ones competing against Tiger Woods.
Yeah, and before we were going to get into this topic, Ray was saying, please, let's not make this about Tiger. Please, let's not make this about Tiger. But you do have to sort of make the comparison to Spieth the Tiger, because in 2002, that was the last time we had a golfer win back-to-back majors, where Tiger Woods won the Masters and the U.S. Open back-to-back in 2002.
And then had a decade of dominance.
Yep, and the other four golfers to accomplish this feat are Hall of Fame members Ben Hogan, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Craig Wood. That is quite a class to be a part of right there if you're young Texan Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, if you're just now old enough to drink, with Jordan Spieth is 21, yeah, it's quite company to stick in time with. And you used to have it back in the day where it was Tiger Woods versus the field. Now you're just looking at individual golfers like McIlroy. You're looking at individual golfers like Spieth, Bubba Watson, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, all these guys that you're looking into as who is going to be the future of golf. I mean, even Electronic Arts has parted ways with Tiger and said, nah, we're done with you. Let's put Rory McIlroy on the cover of our golf games now and see where we go from there.
Yeah, Chambers Bay Golf Course wasn't necessarily kind to the entire field there unless you were Jordan Spieth. But
it was less harsh to Jordan Spieth.
But yeah, you can make the arguments all you want, and I'm sure there are going to be plenty of golfers out there that are going to want to nix Chambers Bay Golf Course at University Place in Washington for any big majors coming up. But the next major coming up is the Open Championship, which will be taking place at St. Andrews in Fife, Scotland, if I pronounced the city there correctly. So they're definitely going to be going into international waters. Jordan Spieth will be going into international waters, where he won in the comforts of Augusta National Golf Club in Augusta, Georgia for the Masters, Chambers Bay in Washington for the U.S. Open. Let me ask you this. Before we get into speculation on if he can win these next events here, where do you rank Jordan Spieth right now as far as current golfers are concerned in PGA, Ray?
Well, right now, he's the best.
Right now.
Because he won two majors right off the gate. The guy's dominance in out-of-major play. So you look at the way he's golfing right now. He's right now the hottest right now. Can he maintain that, though, is the question.
Yeah, and you do have to remember, though, Tiger Woods was your PGA Player of the Year a couple years ago, and in that year, he didn't even win any majors.
No, it was what he did outside of the majors that made him just a good player that year, but seems like we've slipped back into post-2010 Tiger to where, what happened to this guy?
Yeah, and you're also going to have the majors get back to the national lands as they go to Whistling Straits on August 13th in Kohler, Wisconsin. So three of the four are on the homeland there for Jordan Spieth, as the next one will be in Scotland. Let me ask you this. Do you pick Jordan Spieth? By the way, Rory McIlroy is your defending champion of the Open Championship out there in Scotland. And, of course, Rory, who is from overseas and is from that isle, you could say, of Scotland, Ireland, England, and has had plenty of experience playing over in those areas, I'm sure he's got the upper hand in terms of the comfort level playing on those greens. Do you pick Jordan Spieth or the field?
The field.
You really think so? Don't think he...
I just don't think three in a row.
Three in a row is tough. But if he does win three in a row, though, you do have to think that
that is a hell
of a feat right there.
Then I'll say four in a row could be very possible.
Now, say he wins three of four this year. Do you consider him the face of his sport?
Yes.
Do you consider him the face of his sport now?
Getting there, but I still think it's up there with Tiger and McIlroy, even though Tiger's fallen by the wayside.
You know who's winning this whole thing right now is Under Armour.
Yeah.
Jordan Spieth's definitely one of the faces of that product. Steph Curry was a face of Under Armour in terms of basketball.
Yeah, congratulations to the Golden State Warriors for winning the NBA Finals, by the way.
Yeah, definitely won the MVP award and won the World Championship in basketball right there. And also you got Jordan Spieth, who won the first two majors of this young 2015 season, and he's definitely a representative of that brand. So, yeah, the Open Championship, I agree with you. I think going into international waters, I think he'll perform well, but I don't think as far as the traditional golfers go with that field, I don't think it's going to fare well. But I think once he gets back and plays at Wisconsin in August for the PGA title, and by the way, Rory McIlroy is your defending champ in that one as well. So he's got to upend Rory McIlroy, who we discuss is one of the young upstarts in golf and a guy who you could say is a respected face in that sport. So is it safe to say Jordan Spieth is equaling Rory McIlroy's success as the best golfer in his sport, or is he pretty much standing alone right now?
Right now, I say he's equaling. If he wins that third major, he's standing alone. No doubt about it. Okay, before we close the show out, we have to go out there and say that the governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, announced on Monday that he was diagnosed with a very advanced and very aggressive form of lymphoma. So, Mr. Hogan, Mr. Mayor, we wish you a speedy, Mr. Governor, we wish you a speedy recovery and hope that you beat this and conquer this and continue to do success in Maryland and lead Maryland into prosperity. We would hope that would happen. I really hate cancer. It's definitely my least favorite thing in this world. It's the one thing that I obviously say. I mean, a lot of people have phobias of spiders and snakes or anything like that. I have phobia of cancer because I have a family history of it, and it sucks.
Yeah, my uncle had Hodgkin's before, and he had to deal with that, and it's definitely not a pretty battle to go through, let's just say that. And I do agree with you. Cancer does suck, and even with politics aside, you definitely don't want to see anybody go through that at all.
No, so, I don't wish it on my own worst enemy.
Yeah. So you definitely hope the best for Governor Larry Hogan, and you hope he continues to run the state of Maryland. But what are we talking about next week, Ray?
We are talking about the Orioles going 5-1.
So five, you do think 5-1? I say
5-1.
I'm going opposite, saying 4-2. Any notable Ravens news? Are we going to have something happen?
No.
No veteran pickup.
No.
Nothing.
I guarantee you we're going to have some people calling into like radio shows and bitching about the fact that Joe Flacco is not doing squats with his new receivers.
Can we at least say that Justin Forsett is a nice pickup for the rookie symposium?
No.
No? You don't even want to say that?
Nope.
Former late round pick, making it back, nothing?
Call me when the season starts.
Oh my goodness gracious. Maybe the Terps pick up somebody in basketball? Maybe.
They pretty much are stacked right now.
This is what happens when college sports are done. This is what happens when... Oh, wait. No. U.S. Women's soccer. They do play in the elimination round, so yeah. We definitely will have to talk about that.
We could talk about some of the CrossFit games going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
definitely talk about that. Talk about the Baltimore Anthem.
Yeah, the Baltimore Anthem. I mean, come on. That's like the best name for a team right there.
Absolutely. No question about it. So, Ray... Go ahead and give us the send-off, bud.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
And I'm Josh Hall.
And we will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.